It's the time of year when we're all thinking about goals and priorities. Now is the time to plan your next trip. Whatever kind of travel fills you up, whether it's lounging on the beach, connecting with family and friends, or going on a foreign adventure, Expedia has the tools you need to plan a great trip. Download the Expedia app or visit Expedia.com to start planning. You do need to be a One Key member to use price tracking. Signing up is easy and free. Expedia, made to travel.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
I'm Oprah Winfrey. Welcome to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. I believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give yourself is time. Taking time to be more fully present. Your journey to become more inspired and connected to the deeper world around us starts right now.
Our next guest went from being flat broke to writing a memoir that sold millions. And then Reese Witherspoon was nominated for an Oscar for playing her in a movie. Now, how wild is that, I gotta say? And I still marvel when I think of Cheryl Strayed walking alone through the Pacific Coast Mountains for 3 months. And I imagine myself doing it sometimes when I'm walking my dogs. I'm about 200 feet from the house with the flashlight. And then sometimes I cover the flashlight and I pretend I'm on the Pacific Crest Trail. Then I look around, I see the lights of the house, and I realize I'm not. I don't know how she did that. Her new best-selling book is called, I love this book so much, I've just bought this book for everybody I know. I bought it for all of my girls from South Africa. I've given it to everybody for Christmas. It's called Brave Enough. Brave Enough. And one of my favorite quotes is on page 58, in case you have it. And this is what it says. I give this to all my friends who are going through divorce, who are going through challenging times, but this is my favorite quote from Cheryl. It says, you let time pass. That's the cure. You survive the days. You float like a rabbit ghost through the weeks. You cry and you wallow and you lament and you scratch your way back up through the months. And then one day, you find yourself alone on a bench in the sun, and you close your eyes, and you lean your head back, and you realize you're okay. That's Cheryl Strayed from Brave Enough. Her session today is called The Humble Journey to Greatness. Cheryl Strayed.
Hello, everybody. Stay standing. If you're already standing, stay standing. If you can't stand, stay seated. But I want you to reach as high as you can, okay? Reach really high until it like hurts, and then go another inch, and then let go, and sit down. I thought it a good idea to start the morning off with a bit of yoga. When I was 4, my mother enrolled me in a yoga class, which was a kind of unorthodox thing to do. It was 1972 or 73. And so not many people were yet doing yoga, but me, I just want to tell you, at age 4, I was doing yoga. There was this wonderful teacher who wanted to share her love of yoga with a bunch of 3- and 4-year-olds. And the great thing about being 3 or 4 when you do yoga is you can reach pretty much anything. There are parts that I haven't been able to reach, you know, since then. But the downside is you don't have the fine motor skills or the motor skills that it takes, of course, to balance. And so the yoga teacher was always in these beautiful poses, you know, from her, like, eagle position or whatever. She would look around the room, and what she'd see is a classroom of people who didn't look like her. And I just want to say for the record, this remains true in my experience of yoga. I never looked like that teacher. But then, you know, we would be in all of these crazy poses. And the teacher said something that I never forgot. She would say to us, the goal is not to attain the perfect pose. The goal is to reach for it. And it took me, honestly, decades to understand what that really meant, what, you know, to really know it in my bones, the way that we come to know true things in our bones. But it speaks very directly to what I want to talk to you about today, and that is the role of humility in our paths to greatness. I really think that so often, you know, my sort of grandiose title, the humble path, journey to greatness, I really think that so often we forget when we talk about doing our best and being great. We're aiming high, we're shooting for the stars, we're dreaming big. And all of that is sort of rooted in an idea of confidence, of winning. These are ideas that are really prevalent in our culture. And they're really prevalent, you know, obviously, some of the messages that you're going to hear here today, messages you've already heard, really in the self-help movement. And I think that those are incredibly important messages. But what I want to talk about is how sometimes we need to embrace the opposite idea than the one we already had in order to actually make those dreams come true. Those words humility and greatness mean totally different things. To be humble, it comes from the Latin humus. It means to be of the earth. It means to be down low. And of course, greatness is all about being up here. It's about, you know, when we hold somebody in high esteem, they're great. And so those things that can seem like a contradiction, sometimes we disregard them. And, you know, I certainly don't want to say that greatness should be disregarded. But what I'm going to bring forward is humility. Those messages about aiming high and dreaming big, I really credit them so much for many of the good things in my life. But along the path, I did have to learn how to embrace that other thing, that what it meant to be down on the ground. A couple of years after my yoga class, I learned how to read. And this was probably for all of you when that day you learned how to read, or that sort of era of your life when you learned how to read, a really life-changing time. It was a deeply life-changing time for me because, of course, it awakened me to the path that I'd eventually take to become a writer. I remember very clearly having what I think of as an epiphany when I first had that first contact with creative work, with the kind of, by which I mean that kind of work where writers are not just using writing to explain things or instruct, but actually using writing to illuminate the truths of the world, to paint pictures, to give us images, to tell us stories. And I remember thinking, being pierced by the kind of beauty and sorrow that writers made on the page and made in my heart. And I remember thinking that I wanted to be somebody who did that for other people. I wanted to be somebody who made beauty and sorrow in other people's hearts. And I didn't, at the time, I wasn't living the life that one would expect that would grow a writer. I didn't even know, frankly, that writers existed in the world or that somebody like me could be one.
Macy's Mother's Day gift guide has the perfect gift to make mom feel special. Shop by price, like 25 and under to 100 and under. Category, like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything. Gifts that are already wrapped and ready to be gifted and for grandma. Get top gifts like Dolce & Gabbana Devotion Eau de Parfum, Coach Floral Printed Leather Cassie Crossbody Bag, and Le Creuset Shallot Dutch Oven. Shop at Macy's.com/giftfinder. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
When I learned how to read, I was living with my mother, who was a single mom. She had just recently left my father, who was abusive to her and violent. I'd had a very difficult and tumultuous first 6 or 7 years of my life. And she just bravely left him. And we were living, you know, in apartment buildings. My brother and sister and I and my mom were single moms lived. And my mom worked as a waitress, and she worked in a factory. And that sort of yoga class aside, I wasn't, I didn't have that kind of childhood of opportunity where my mom was signing me up for classes or saying, gee, you're interested in writing, let's you know, hook you up with other people who are doing that. So I really had to find my way, and I did. And I did it thanks to those kind of narratives of greatness, that aiming high, that dreaming big. I was always wildly, almost embarrassingly, almost arrogantly ambitious. When I was like 4 and people asked me, you know, what do you want to be? I would just be like the first woman president of the United States. So I sort of started high. We're still working on that, aren't we? Maybe I will be after all. Depends how things turn out. I'm here to announce my candidacy. But what happened is I, you know, went off to college, and by age 19, I was paying my way through college, and I was really, you know, very directed. And if you'd met me when I was 19, I would have told you not just that I was a writer, but that my intention was to write the great American novel. And everything I worked on, I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be writing the best novel that had ever been written. Now, even then, you know, I didn't think that I would necessarily do that, but that was the bar that I set. That's what I was shooting for. And in retrospect, you know, I think that that absolutely served me, because those of you who've read my work and who are familiar with parts of my life story know that when I was a senior in college, my mom died. She died very suddenly at the age of 45 of cancer. And I was an orphan, and I didn't have anyone saying to me that they believed in me or that I should do this or that or I had to fulfill these dreams. I had to really propel you know, my own engine. And it was those big dreams of greatness that pushed me. And they pushed me even in those hard times that the world has become familiar with now, that decade of my 20s that was full of struggle and strife and mistakes and things that really you would think weren't conducive to writing the great American novel, and I'm here to tell you they were not. But I'm also here to tell you that I never lost my writing. In the hardest of times, I held on to my writing. My writing, I always think of it as the one unbroken thread of my life. It's the thing that has always been there for me. It has always been true, and I think it always will be true. And so I waited tables, and I wrote. And I went hiking, and I wrote. And I landed on the doorstep of 30, and I hadn't published a novel, much to my surprise. Partly because I hadn't started one. But, you know, just little detail there. I'd written a lot of pages. I'd written. And I didn't understand that a bunch of pages didn't stack up to be a novel. I teach writing sometimes, and my students are sometimes also sad to hear that when they come to me with their pages. You know, there's a book takes a greater sense of concentration. And I decided to go to graduate school. One of the wonderful things about many MFA programs in creative writing in the U.S., they offer, they just let in a few students, and they offer you full tuition, remission, and a fellowship. And so I applied to grad school, and I went to Syracuse University, and I spent about 2.5 years working really hard on my novel, what became my first novel, Torch. And I finished that program. It was about, my novel was about a half to two-thirds done. And I was really, you know, stepping back into real life with a master's degree in fine arts, which sounds very highfalutin, but if you know anything about the writing life, what it meant is I was going to go back and be a waitress. And And I didn't want to do that because what I was afraid of is that this big dream was finally in my hands, right? I was almost there. I had so much momentum. I was writing this book. And I didn't want to have to go back to this working life and then put that novel on the sidelines again and maybe never finish it. And so my husband and I talked, my wonderfully supportive husband who's here today, we talked and we decided he's a documentary filmmaker, which is kind of like being a poet in America in terms of financial stability. We love them, we need them, we do not pay them. So it was a big deal that I was saying, I don't want to go work, and I was losing my fellowship. But, you know, he's always been so on my side that we cooked up a scheme together. We decided that I would not take a job for the year after graduate school so I could finish my book, and we would go into credit card debt for my portion of the income. Now, I am not a financial advisor. So you can either take or ignore my advice at your own peril, okay? So we decided to do this. And at the time, my husband had gotten a job at this place, and it required us to move to this little town called Sheffield, Massachusetts. And we rented this little cottage on a pond, and it was perfect because I didn't know anybody, and my husband was going to be leaving the house for at least 8 hours every day. And I was going to sit down and write not just the great American novel, the best novel that had ever been written, or I was going to try to finish that. So we did, and he went off, you know, to work. What happened, another thing that coincided with this moment of our lives is that we decided that we would start thinking about trying to conceive a baby, and that also we got cable television. I had hardly even ever had a TV. And some of you might be aware that I learned really quickly when we got cable, there is a lot of stuff to watch. And so my husband went off to work the first day, and I sit down on my computer, and I'm going to write the great book. And so the TV is just calling me, you know? And it seemed like a vast mistake to ignore all of those things that might be available to me. And so what I did is I turned on the TV, and I found a show pretty quickly called Baby Story. I don't know if any of you have seen this show. I don't know if it's still on. It's a reality show, and each episode you follow a woman through her pregnancy and the birth of her baby. And they always do two episodes back to back. And I was like, well, it would be irresponsible to have a baby without watching Baby Story. Like, it's like research, right? And so I was watching that, and then there was a show that came on before Baby Story that was like following somebody through their wedding planning. And then afterwards, it was like people renovating a room in their house. And it just seemed like, you know, an education. So I was watching. And then I would write, like, those shows would end. And then I'd realize my husband was going to come home. And I would quickly sit down on my computer and try to write. But those days stacked up on each other. And I felt horrible. My heart just sunk. Because I knew what I was doing was squandering this really important moment in my life, and I was not doing what I intended to do. I was doing the opposite. I was saying, "Oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna do this thing." Everyone who knew me and loved me would say, "Yeah, Cheryl's a writer," and there I was alone in my house, and I had to ask myself those hard questions. And realized that maybe I'd been lying to myself all along. Maybe I didn't want to write a novel. Maybe it wasn't my calling. Maybe that thing that I felt in my heart when I was six was just, you know, some sort of childhood fantasy. And maybe, you know, that all that work I'd done was for absolutely nothing. It really hurt to ask those questions because, of course, the minute I asked them, what I knew is that it wasn't true that I didn't want to be a writer. I did want to be a writer. It wasn't true that I wasn't called to be a writer. It wasn't true that this isn't what I intended. And once I understood that, that was even more painful. Because the deal is, if I wanted to be a writer and then wasn't being it, what was true is that I was just failing at it. It wasn't like, oh, you just need to change course. This was the wrong thing. It was, you are a failure. I had my dream in my grasp, and I was too weak to hold it. It was too hard. It was too big. I was too, I don't know what. I was too much of a failure to see it through. What happens when we do that? What happens when we don't act upon our most important intentions? What do we do when we say one thing and then we do another? What do you do if you've aimed so high and aspire to be the best and all of that stuff that I was doing and realize that you're a failure? What happens when we have only ourselves to blame? That was it for me. It was just me and me.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The great writer Flannery O'Connor, one of my favorite quotes, wrote this: "To know oneself is above all to know what one lacks. It is to measure oneself against truth, not the other way around. The first product of self-knowledge is humility." So in that cottage in the town of Sheffield, Massachusetts, when I was 33 years old and supposed to be writing the great American novel, I had that moment where I made a hard stop at humility. I've been on a lot of journeys. I've written about some of them. I've had hard, difficult travels and adventures and struggles and toenails falling off and all of those things. But I'm here to tell you, it seems strange, but it's true, that one of the hardest journeys of my life was that one I was taking alone in that house when I was battling between my biggest dreams and some silly reality TV shows. It was my moment of truth. And I think it's a moment, I know it's a moment that everyone in this room has had to have maybe a few times over the course of your life. And if you haven't had to have that moment yet, it's coming. And that is when you have to ask yourself, you know, not who you aspire to be, but to reckon with who you actually turn out to be, who you actually are. And what I realized, what humility taught me, is that I couldn't any longer adhere to the narratives that had gotten me this far. I had to relinquish all of those anthems of greatness and dreaming big and aiming high, all of those beautiful, powerful, important things that had really gotten me there. They weren't serving me anymore. And so I had to come up with something that would. I knew I was going to fall short of greatness. So I had to rewrite the story of what greatness was. I had to figure out how to measure success differently, and I also had to figure out what purpose dreams served, if they served them at all. Maybe part of what, you know, was getting in my way was those very dreams. The title, the subtitle, this was actually going to be the title, Don't Let Your Dreams Ruin Your Life. That was going to be the title of this talk, but I thought it would be too depressing. So we got the humble journey to greatness. But the real message is, don't let your dreams ruin your life. That was that truth that rose up at my humblest, lowest moment was basically that I had to write a book. And that was it. It was forget the greatness, forget the who was going to, forget if anyone would even read it. I had to write a book. And I had to surrender to the idea of my own mediocrity. I had to really just go, hello, mediocre person who's sitting alone in a cottage and writing a book. Nice to know you. I've, you know, spent 33 years in your company, and we're going to now get to work. In short, I had to finally believe what that yoga teacher taught me you know, like 30 years before. Do you ever get that? Like a voice of truth that then, you know, it's like years and years, and finally you're like, oh yeah, I should have listened to that. Everyone in the room who's a mother is like, see? Yeah, someday. And I had to say, okay, the point isn't about holding the perfect pose. It's about reaching for it. That's why I made you reach up there. Just to remember what it feels like to reach. I think every day, remember what it feels like to reach. Don't remember what it feels like to be perfect, because none of you have been there. And if you have, we don't want to know you. So I decided to write the only book I could possibly write, and whether that was a bad book or a good book or a terrible book, that was not my business. My business was making good on my intentions, and that is your business too, every single one of you in the room. And that calling, to make good on your intentions, it translates across profession. This isn't just about writing a novel or, you know, it's not about an artistic career. It's about who we are as parents, as partners, as citizens, who we are in alone with ourselves. What is this, you know, it's about saying, I'm no longer going to say I'm something and be another, right? It's also saying, what are those goals I set way too high to reach? Those goals don't serve you. Make your goals down here so you can grab them when you need them, right? If I printed a bumper sticker, which I'm not gonna do, so if one of you guys is a bumper sticker maker, feel free to use it. It would say, surrender to your own mediocrity. Which, again, it seems like a sentiment that's counter to everyone who's ever sort of tried to make you feel good and okay and all that stuff. It seems counter to that. But I actually think that surrender to your own mediocrity speaks exactly to the heart of what that really means, okay? And part of being evolved is having the capacity to hold two opposing truths in one hand and recognizing the truth of each and understanding how they serve each other. When you surrender to your own mediocrity, what you're doing is humbly acknowledging that the very, very best thing that you have to give us is only what you have to offer, okay? It's what you already have. It's what you already hold. It's about learning how to put it out into the world in a way that you absolutely are the most original master of that endeavor, okay? It's about not paying attention to anyone else's script of success or goodness. It's about singing with your own voice. And the word for that is greatness. Thank you. Thank you.
Cheryl Strayed, what a wild talk.
I love you, baby.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. You can follow Super Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Super Soul Conversation. Thank you for listening.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.